Hello and welcome to The Way I See It. My name is Vanessa Coleman. Today my guest is Helen Wright. I met her approximately 5 or 6 weeks ago at a business seminar, and since then we have become firm friends. After reading my book, she sent me an email and basically, well, in fact, I'll read a little bit from it. It says that I don't meet many people who had the same determination as I did at a tender age. I've often felt very odd to have lived my life as I have, but reading about yours was an aha moment. Perhaps we are given special children because we are special people who are able to cope with their needs. And at the end of this, she goes on to say that since she's read my book, she wanted to write her own book, and reading mine has given her the inspiration. So as I said in my blog, you know, if you only inspire one person in your life, everything is worthwhile. Anyway, I'm just about to introduce you to Helen. So welcome, Helen. Would you like to tell us a little bit about your most interesting life?
Thank you, Vanessa. Well, I'm the youngest of 8 children. There are 6 girls and 2 boys in my family. My mother was a Greek Cypriot and my father came from Bedford in Bedfordshire, where I grew up and I stayed for 50 years. I started work quite unusually at the age of 15 years and 1 day, because I'd left school in the summer holidays and I was still 14 years old. At that time, you didn't have to stay on at school until you were 16. I've always had a very strong work ethic, came from my parents. In fact, my grandparents were the first people on Bedford Market to ever sell fish. And they ran a very successful business for many, many years. My father and most of his brothers were professional boxers. So we go back a long way. In fact, my father's most treasured story was how he promoted Freddie Mills at Bedford Corn Exchange. Freddie Mills was murdered, and my father spent many a day talking about the boxing world and where he trained and who he knew.
If I'm right, I think that Freddie Mills has connections to Bournemouth. I feel pretty certain about that.
That I don't know. What I do know was that my father used to train at Thomas a Becket in the Old Kent Road in London, and that's where he met and got to know many of his sparring partners. There was a little bit of an underground world there as well. Unfortunately, my father tended to communicate with his fists, so I did watch him abuse my mother physically when we were growing up, and also my brothers, who both left home at a very early age, as did I, all of us did. When I look back on it now, I think, well, yes, I could understand why we did that. But then, of course, we left my mother in the situation of living with someone who wasn't very good at coping with life in general.
Was he violent after you left then?
Not so much, because he was quite elderly then. And in fact, I married at the age of 18, but by then, all my brothers and sisters were living independent lives and they were scattered all over the place. However, I still stayed in Bedford. So looking back, from the age of 11, I was the one that used to help my parents fill in forms, which they hated doing, and organise their benefits. And I was the one that helped my father move into nursing care. He had a stroke, or a series of strokes, and he lasted for 4 years, after which my mother visibly relaxed and started to enjoy the end of her life.
How do you think your father's violence in your home life affected you, your attitudes to life? Do you think it affected you a lot?
Absolutely. Even now, I can talk about incidents that happened when I was quite tiny. I can remember the violence. I can remember my mother going backwards over a brick wall in the road. I could remember the bruises. And so we had this image, if you like, that men weren't any good.
So why did you marry at 18?
Well, because I met my husband, who I've now been with for 44 years. We've been married for 42, who came from a completely different background.
Because what often happens is that people often attract the very thing that they're trying to get away from.
And I saw that in at least one of my sisters. But because of that, I was absolutely determined that that wasn't going to be my life.
Was that an older sister then?
Yes. Yeah. They were all older than me.
Yes. Yes. So then what happened?
When I married, I decided I didn't want children.
Really?
If I did want children, I didn't want them for a long time. And because my husband...
Why was that?
Because of my childhood.
Yeah.
There was never any money, so all the clothes that I wore were passed down to me from my older sisters.
So that was a long passing then, wasn't it?
Well,
a bit like pass the parcel.
When the song of Secondhand Rose came to my attention, I realised firsthand what it was all about.
Yeah.
But no, it was something that made me more determined to go out and succeed. And even though I got married at the age of 18, I did tell my husband, who was in the fire service at that time, that I wasn't interested in having children until we had made our way in the world, which we did. We built three houses.
Wow. So I honestly believe from my own experience that what happens as a child, it really does make a difference to your life in the future, doesn't it?
You can either accept to be a victim or
yeah.
not. And I decided at a very early age that I wouldn't be a victim.
Mm.
When my first child came along, James...
Was this planned then or...?
Yes, it was. Mm. Terry was one of three. And
that's your husband.
Yes, yeah. And I half-heartedly agreed to have a family, thinking I might have one. And I was very happy. I had a really good pregnancy. I was blooming. I loved it. I loved everything about it. And by that time, we were fairly financially stable. And he was my little man, and we had a great time together. And then I became pregnant unexpectedly. One could say, well, surely you knew what you were doing.
Yeah,
but
these things happen.
They do. And Amy was the result, and thank goodness she has been what I would consider my big life's lesson.
I think because the listener doesn't know the full story yet, I think this is one of the things that you and I have in common is the fact that we believe that our children, our daughters, are a gift from God, because I think if it hadn't been for Elizabeth, I probably would not have wanted to have carried on after my downfall. She's been my reason for living, and I have been blessed because of her.
Well, there is a statistic that the parents of children who have a disability are more than likely not to give up. They're more than likely not to commit suicide, for instance. Mm. And both you and I know that you can be on your knees and absolutely desperate and not know which way you were going to turn. I mean, for the first 5 years of her life, I was awake probably up to six times a night because she was born with cerebral palsy. And one of the side...
Did you know this from the beginning?
No, no.
What did you know from the beginning then?
Not a lot, only that she cried an awful lot.
But did you know there was something wrong?
Yes. Because I'd had James,
yeah.
By the time Amy was 4 months old, I knew that she wasn't following the same path of reaching her goals.
Yeah.
So at 4 months, she still wasn't trying to turn over, but there was an awful lot of crying going on.
Yeah.
And going back to your comment, I would say that you say that Elizabeth probably saved you. I would say that without my faith, I wouldn't have been able to have coped.
Mm.
And I feel that I was given this very special personality, if you like, that enabled me to strive for absolutely the best for my children.
Mm. Oh, you've gone all goosey.
Yeah. Well, you know, our stories can be emotional, and unless you're living it on a day-to-day basis, it's very hard for other people to understand. In fact, I had a conversation with a gentleman in Romsey the other day who runs Riding for the Disabled, and he said he can spend a couple of hours doing it, but my goodness, he couldn't do any more. And he said, I do admire people like you who are 24/7 on the case.
Yes. I don't know about Amy, but sometimes I find that when Elizabeth gets very frustrated, she throws things. And I think it's just that she can't express herself. It's just one of the consequences. Thank goodness it doesn't happen a lot, but it's just something that you have to learn to live with, isn't
it? Well, it's frustration. Amy speaks beautifully now, but for the first 5 years of her life, she couldn't communicate. In fact, she used to grab my hand and was her
language. Must have been very distressing.
It was incredibly distressing. So we learned Makaton sign language.
Makaton?
Makaton, a very simple sign language which completely opened her world.
Really? That's fantastic. So take us on from when she was young. How did you cope and what happened? What help did you get?
There wasn't a lot of help. My husband was out at work all day. I had a 2 to 3 year old running around in James. And of course, there is this overpowering need to make sure that the other child doesn't suffer.
Yes.
And so it would be a case of helping him to enjoy his former years in the best way possible, as well as coping with Amy. But by the time she got to 2 years of age, I knew that I had to do something in terms of getting help. So I spoke to the doctor who helped me find a place for Amy in a nursery. And when we first...
Was this local?
It was. We lived in Bedford at the time. And when we first took her there, she was just sitting in the corner of the room.
This is what happened, I remember, when Elizabeth went to the first play school. And you could see that she was different from all the others. She would just sit there and watch and not particularly know how to integrate.
Mm-hmm. But then they use other senses. And Amy loved touch. And she had, by that time, she was wearing spectacles. She had, I remember, these little round glasses with an elastic band around the back that went round the back of her head.
Yeah.
So that helped because, obviously, yeah, before she had those, she couldn't see either. So no speech, not a great deal of sight, and not getting about. She did actually walk at the age of 17 months, which, looking back on now, I find remarkable, but she did. And after the nursery, when she was old enough, she went into something called the Child Development Centre. So she was there for a short time, where it wasn't only a time for her to learn to integrate with other people who had problems or learning difficulties, but for me too, because I was suddenly thrust into this world of disability. Everything that I thought was normal became different. It was just different.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it, Helen, that it's very difficult for people to understand, or, you know, unless somebody's in your shoes or has been in your shoes, they don't really know what it's like, because most people, their children go and they're off your hands and that. But for us, we know that that's never going to happen.
No, and if you look at it as a whole, the task would become impossible. What you have to do is take bite-sized chunks and go from sometimes one day to the next day.
Oh, I very much believe in living for the day. No, it's like the AA thing, but really and truthfully, it's the only way that I can cope.
With James, I wanted to make plans for his education, and he had, in a way, his life mapped out for him. But then I learned that that wasn't the right thing to do either. Mm. He is now a very successful businessman. He runs his own business with his business partner in Cornwall. They have a surf shop called Watershed.
Great.
That are doing incredibly well. I miss him, but I know that that is what he wants to do.
Was he always a surfer?
No, but as a young lad, he was fascinated by skateboarding.
Oh, gosh, we've got something else in common. My son Mark used to drive us up the creek with his skateboarding.
He absolutely adored it, and he couldn't understand why we felt that his passion was probably over and above what we would have expected a hobby to be, but it never really left him. His life took a path where he had a fantastic education, but he hated school.
Mm. And so he didn't like academia then?
He didn't, but there was always something special about him. He's a very caring person. When he had his little chums round to play, often the boys would get embarrassed about their siblings, but
yeah,
James would put his arm around Amy and make a fuss of her, and it was just so lovely to see. Mm. And I could see what sort of a man he was growing into.
Yeah, oh, wonderful, yeah.
That's he did good. Go off travelling. That's another story, but he had to come back because my husband had a health challenge. But the end result was that we thought we were doing the right thing by giving him private schooling and putting him in the right environment, but it wasn't what he wanted.
Mm.
I believe instead of trying to give children a sort of respectable mark in every subject, what you should do is you should take their passion and work with that.
I couldn't agree more, because my son has been involved in weightlifting and everything all basically since he left school. So, you know, although the good thing, he was good at maths and English, the main subjects. But I agree with you. And I've always thought that apprenticeships and learning on the job is so much better, because if you have a good mentor, you learn so much more, I think. That's my personal experience.
And it's that old adage, isn't it? If you do something you love, you'll never work a day in your life.
And exactly.
He is living the dream.
Yes, wonderful, wonderful. So take us on a little bit then. So what happened for you with Amy with regard to help with social services and things like that? Were you always looking after her on your own? Because that must have been, with the best will in the world, that must have been very, very tiring.
It was tiring, and it put a strain on me, and it put a strain on my husband, and it put a strain on us as a couple. But here we are 42 years later and still married, and it's a true success story, because when you, as you know, raise a child with challenges and you come out the other end, you really can look back on it and think, wow, how did I do that? But I did,
yeah,
I did
yeah.
it. When she left the Child Development Centre, she went into...
And what age would that be?
She was very young. She was probably about five.
Mm.
And in between the age of five and six, she was in a special type of school. But at 6 years old, she actually progressed into mainstream learning support. So she went into our local primary school, and then she went to the middle school,
yes,
and then to the upper school. So she did go through normal schooling, if you like, but with learning support. But every single achievement was not just a milestone. It was a massive milestone.
Climbing a mountain each time.
Yeah. So then we had to face what would happen to Amy after she left school. And this is when it started to get rather scary. The cocoon of family life and local schooling was wonderful. And... it was a case of not wanting to look too far into the future, but suddenly we were forced to do so. And we went to have a look at a college nearby to where we lived. And as soon as we went inside, we realised that it wasn't for Amy, because the poor darlings there were very, very disabled. And Amy stood out like a sore thumb.
Mm. Yes, so many similar things. Like for Elizabeth, she exactly the same. Although she couldn't cope in main school, but when she went to Linwood School, which was wonderful, she was one of the more, shall we say, healthier of the children there. But she loved to help everybody.
Mm.
So she was a carer.
Well, Amy was the office runner, if you like. So, oh, Amy, go to the headmaster's office, because she was the only one that could do it at times when she was in...
that must be good for her self-worth, though.
Yes, it was. I mean, unfortunately, things happen in life and sometimes we lose our confidence, and that's what happened to Amy. The first college that she went to post-school was the most wonderful experience she could ever have had. She went to the Trelaw College in Alton in Hampshire.
This is Hampshire, so were you still in Bedford?
We were in Bedford, but we decided that we were going to up sticks and move to Hampshire, because although Amy would be residential, we needed to be closer to her. And as fate would have it, on the first journey from Bedford to Hampshire, on the way home, we had a horrendous traffic jam, and it took us 4 hours to get back. And we made a decision that night that we were going to move to Hampshire.
You knew that you couldn't possibly live so far away.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so 3 very happy years at Alton.
So you moved to?
Moved to it was nearer Fareham, and we loved it in Hampshire. We really, really loved it. I mean, we'd spent 50 years living in Bedfordshire, and it's quite a late stage in life to move. But everything fell into place.
It was meant to be. Yes.
Terry got a job, and we got a house, and Amy got the place in college, and it was just the right thing to do.
Yes.
After that very successful three years, we had to make a decision about what would happen next. But as far as the government were concerned, by that time, Amy was 19. Mm. And they more or less say, well, that's it. We've done our bit. There isn't any more money. She has to now go out into the community. And we knew that Amy wasn't ready. She was like a very, very young child still.
Yeah. I mean, when they say out in the community, I mean, what in practical terms, what does that really mean?
Putting her in a house with other people of both sexes, probably up to the age of 40, and bearing in mind that Amy was functioning around 6, 7, 8.
You couldn't possibly do that, could you? You would never have a minute's peace of mind, would you?
It wasn't for us. No. We knew that we wouldn't settle for that. Our next step was to find the next place for her to go to, and we liked the sound of a college in Surrey, and we had to fight pretty hard to get her the funding to go there. In actual fact, we landed up selling our home because we were so confident that it was the right place for her to go that we were prepared to go into rented accommodation and give up our home for it.
Well, that is some achievement, isn't it? But I mean, I can quite understand that, because the most important thing is to make sure that your children are safe, isn't it? That's uppermost.
It is, but it had a knock-on effect because it was the worst time of our lives. Terry had, my husband had a heart attack, and we know that it was caused by the stress of the situation of trying to get Amy's funding and selling our home. My son was travelling by then. He was on the other side of the world in Australia. My mother died, and I became incredibly depressed.
Isn't it funny how everything always seems to happen at the same time? It can happen at the same time for being good, but it also can happen at the same time where everything is a trial and a tribulation.
It was a typical example of major things in life that happen. So if you think about getting married, moving house, death in the family, each of those big events have points attached to them. Mm. And when most people get to about 250 points, they get to a point where they can't cope. I got to 350.
Gosh.
And so I knew that I was in very dangerous water.
But you had to rely just on yourself then, basically, at that time.
I was incredibly lonely. James was away, Terry was at work, Amy was at college. I was on my own in a new town. I didn't know anyone, I didn't have any relatives. And yes, it was very, very hard. The beauty of having a faith is that you know that you're never on your own.
Yes.
And unless you know what I know in terms of being supported in that area, spiritually supported, you wouldn't understand. But I knew that I was going to be okay, even though I was at my very worst at that time.
So because of your Christian faith, you've always felt a presence there that's guided you through.
Yes, because it isn't a case of religion. I believe that religiosity is man-made.
Yes.
What it was about was my relationship with God.
Yes.
And it is very personal. Mm. It's like when you're bereaved, no one can tell you how to grieve. They just wouldn't understand it.
Mm.
It is a very personal thing. So it's something that you know in your, I'll use the word gut.
Yes.
It's something that you know. Many of us have had experiences. We've had supernatural, you can call it supernatural, because in the natural, people don't believe it. So therefore, it is supernatural. But then the strongest faith is when you don't have those experiences, but you still know that you're going to be okay.
And so I take it then that you won the case.
We did.
And then what happened?
Amy went to a college in Surrey for 2 years, and she sort of enjoyed it, but that's where it started to go wrong, because after her first year, she was put into some outside accommodation. And as far as we're concerned, it wasn't safe, it wasn't the right thing to do, and she wasn't getting the care that she needed. She began to have experiences that we didn't particularly want to expose her to. In fact, once she was attacked by a boy who wanted her attention, and he started to physically attack her. The headmistress at the time wasn't particularly helpful. She was taking money Amy's money to use for the college, and Amy wasn't getting the right benefits out of that money. So it wasn't totally satisfactory, and the college actually failed their Ofsted that year.
Oh dear.
So plan B had to kick in.
Which was?
That Amy would go and live with a friend that she'd met at Trelaw College, and this particular friend owned her own property in North Devon. And for the first 5 years, we would go and visit her every 3 or 4 weeks and come away and think, wow, we've hit the jackpot. This is the answer.
Everything's great, yes.
But unfortunately, it wasn't.
Nothing good ever seems to last, doesn't it?
No, I mean, we used to say, if we had all the money in the world, we've got the perfect solution. But then you get taught a lesson. And that lesson was that nothing is forever.
Yes.
At that time, I never envisaged that Amy would ever come home. But things started to go wrong. And we spun it out really for too long. For 18 months she was very unhappy. Although Amy does speak, one of her difficulties is that she can't relate things in a way that you and I would have a discussion.
Same as Elizabeth, she couldn't tell you. If I ask her what's been on the television, she couldn't describe it to me. Is that similar, would you say?
Yes, it is, because often I'm sure people look at me and think, be quiet, because we want Amy to tell us, but Amy will look at me and say, you tell them, Mum.
Yes, similar, yes. Yeah.
Anyway, it came to a head, and one Sunday we left here, Hampshire, very early in the morning, and arrived in North Devon by 9:45, packed up all her stuff, and within an hour she was out. We rescued her.
Right.
And she's been home with us ever since.
So how many years is that?
That was June of last year.
Yeah.
So then started the next chapter, which was incredibly difficult, because if you imagine, for 6.5 years she'd lived in North Devon, so all the benefits that she received for living were paid from North Devon, and any care that she was getting was centred around North Devon, and we moved her to Hampshire. And so began the form filling.
Form filling, oh my God,
and
terrible.
And the fighting. Part of it is trying to understand. I mean, very often.
Understand what?
Well, understand how these things work, because you're not told, you have to find out for yourself.
To me, it's like going through a maze. I hate form filling. I mean, I really do. If there's the one thing, the forms for Elizabeth, they're terrible. And if you don't just get it right, all of a sudden, you haven't got the benefit that you had before.
Well, if you take yourself back to the beginning of the conversation, when I said I was 11, when I used to help my parents fill out the forms, I think sometimes it was something that was preparing me for the future. Although I wouldn't say that I was absolutely brilliant, but I'm really, really good with words.
So really, Helen, they would welcome you, I think, at Citizens Advice Bureau, don't
they?
Well,
they offered me a job.
Did they? I should think so.
Because, and this is why, everything I've ever done in life has been to learn for Amy.
Yeah.
So I became a nutritional advisor.
Oh, yeah.
I became a life coach.
Yeah.
I became a writer.
Yes.
And I became a presenter.
And what were you presenting?
At the time, it was a business.
Yeah.
And my business partner and I were quite successful. But as in business, some things succeed and some don't.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean that you're a failure, does it? It's just another learning experience.
Oh, absolutely. And when I was writing, I was actually writing a regular monthly column for a newspaper in North Devon about nutrition. And I absolutely loved it. And in doing that...
Did you get feedback from this?
Yes.
Yeah.
And in doing that, I again, I had learned, I had moved forward another step. So it was scary at the time because I'd never done anything like that before. But I'd always said that I wanted to write my book.
Yeah.
And I know that I can do it. I think the very fact that anybody says I want to write a book means they can do it.
Yes. I think, and also I think obviously from my own experience that once you set that seed, until you've done it, it claws at you. You have to do it. But I personally believe that every parent should try and write a book, if nothing more than for their children, their grandchildren, because our children don't really know who we are.
No, and for me, being a parent is about giving my children a chance to live their best life.
Yeah.
Now, James is living his best life, doing what he wants to do.
Yeah.
He's enjoying what he's doing and he's earning a living. Amy is living her best life at the age of 30, living with her parents, doing what she enjoys doing.
So that brings me on to the next point, Helen, which I know you and I agonize about. What about the future when, you know, obviously the day will come when you are not around? What have you planned anything for Amy? What does this, well, I suppose the state offers things, but to me that's a bit scary.
Well, they do. James is, of course, there for Amy, but I've always felt that it's very unfair to expect that James would take on that responsibility. I think he will, but it would mean her moving again to another county and setting her life up. For instance, she loves her life at the moment. She works at a local primary school 3 mornings a week, helping the very little ones. And it gives her untold pleasure. She absolutely adores it. And I worry that any life she has in the future will have to be completely recreated.
Yeah.
And of course nothing is done without money.
But also I say once again that I think that your faith will prevail and in the end everything will be okay.
I've got to believe that. I know that we're protected. I know that all of us are guided.
Yes.
I know that all we have to do is ask.
Yes.
Some people put too much of a serious spin on it. If all they realized is that they've just got to ask for the help and know that it's there. Everything is what it is. Don't fret and worry about what it could be or what it should have been. And this is where I have to really take myself to task because of the situation that you and I are in.
But I think, to me, one of the most important words is acceptance. I think once we accept our lot and get on with it, we are, the more we kind of give, the more we get. I believe that we get that extra guidance because we keep going on the road, and on the road there's always something there for us.
And what's the alternative? Because if we were to give up...
It never enters my head. There is no alternative as far as I'm concerned.
And I think that's what's made you such a strong person. I know that I'm perceived as being a strong person as too. I consider myself odd because I come from my mother was a Greek Cypriot, my father was an English person, so there's that mixture of blood. We're all... people in our family are all quite extrovert.
Yeah.
And I think what I have is boldness. I'm kind. I'm very, very kind.
Yeah.
But I'm bold. I say things that people think.
But you are Leo the lion. So you're the bold lion strutting around. Well, I suppose you're the lioness, really, aren't you?
Yeah, but the other side of that is that we're very generous, too.
Yeah.
We might be leaders, but we do have this generosity.
So is your hair important to you?
Love my hair.
Yes. Well, of course, you realise that the lion loves his mane.
Yes.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Anyway, so let's bring us up to the present. So if you'd like to tell the listener how we met and why we met and how our paths crossed.
I'm so happy that we met. We were introduced by my business partner and we met at a business meeting. And
what's this business then?
We were introduced to a company called Chartfords.
Mm.
Chartfords has now changed its name to become Premier Cashback because the business model has changed to incorporate new products, which is marvellous because it means that the bigger the company, the better the opportunity for the person who's working the business.
And of course, we're coming up to your favourite products, which are about...
nutrition.
Mm.
And of course...
So you're already top of the class.
I didn't know that Chartfords were introducing a nutritional range. And this is where my story is really exciting. It's so lovely for me. It's just lovely because when I was the nutritional advisor for a nutritional company about 20 years ago, 25 years ago, I had the best job in the world. They'd send me all over Europe and I would present Mind and Body Days for 6 hours at a stretch. And sometimes I had to have a translator. So that was no easy feat.
Yeah.
I remember being in Berlin once, and of course I had to remember to say maybe a couple of sentences and wait for the translator to...
Guten Tag, lot of Guten Tag.
But a fantastic job. The reason I was so successful, the reason I was offered the job was because of my passion for finding out what people could use, take, and become healthy and well without having to rely on pharmaceuticals.
So, I mean, passion is the thing that really can drive you forward. That's what gives you the energy. And obviously, dealing with your favourite subject, nutrition, it's like manna from heaven, isn't it?
Well, I can look at someone's face and tell them if they've got a crease in their ear, I can tell them to go and get their blood pressure tested and get their cholesterol tested.
I don't like the way you're looking at me now when you're saying that.
Can you imagine what it's like when I'm in a room full of people and I look at their eyes and their ears?
Yeah.
Wondering what's going on.
Yeah.
But I do tell them, because how cruel would it be not to give someone that advice?
Yeah.
And if someone came to me and said, look, I've got this problem or that problem, and I've been to the doctor and they don't give me a solution, they just give me a tablet to mask it, I would give them their advice. And it isn't something I want to charge for. I am so giving. That's what I want to do.
Yeah. So going back to this business opportunity, why is it different from all the other things that you've done? Why do you think that this one is so so good, so right for the time as well?
There have been a lot of opportunities out there where I and many of my colleagues have put a great deal of work and effort and time and maybe money into making the businesses work. And some of them did for a while.
Mm.
And I've had a certain amount of success, but I've never had the level of the success that I deserve.
Mm.
And I know that this company is going to do that for me.
Mm.
In actual fact, talking about the last nutritional experience, I've been waiting for over a decade to replace the products that I used to advise people with.
Mm.
We lost those products. It was one of those businesses that was very successful for many years. And then it was an American company that was taken over and driven into the ground.
Yeah. You see, you have to have a balance of everything. It's not just the products, but it's the whole setup, isn't it? And I think that's why this particular business is very good, because it looks after its members. The products are brilliant. And who knows what the future's going to be with ongoing different things.
And the advantage here that we have is that it doesn't matter how much hard work and effort you put into it, you're never going to have to go out there and do it again and again and again. Because once you've done the right thing in the beginning with this company, with Chartfords or Premier Cashback, you have retained those people for life.
Yeah.
It's not a case of going out and selling products every month. You don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah. Well, I think, Helen, that was probably the main reason why I came on board, was because I loved it. And I found it difficult to believe when they said 100% retention, no selling, no paperwork, which I absolutely hate, and no monthly auto fee, because I was looking at something else prior to this opportunity. And as soon as I was told I had to do a monthly auto ship, I said no, because I just couldn't commit to it. And that's why I love this business. But more than anything, it's been really great to meet you and to know that there's somebody else out there that's has had so many similar things happen in their lives.
Well,
so
Yeah, there you go. It's divine intervention again.
Exactly. And I don't know about you, but I've also met some amazing people. And it is a business opportunity where everybody helps each other. So I'm going to say thank you for being here today. And should anybody be interested in knowing about this great business opportunity, then just email me and, you know, I'll get back in touch. But thank you once again, Helen, and have a great day.
Thank you.
After Helen left, she sent me an email. It was something that she'd forgotten to say while she was here. And so she's asked me to read it out. She goes on to say that Amy lost her confidence while she was living in Devon and she became immobile, even though she had been a walker before she started living there. When Amy came home last June, she could only get around with a four-wheeled walker, which she had used for 4 years. And Helen said she was determined to get to help Amy get her confidence back. And with Amy's own tenacity, she gingerly tried and mastered a tri-walker and then a walking stick with an arm to hold onto. She had also been unable to stay in the house on her own, but she has since achieved that and stays on her own for an hour at a time. Amy has raised thousands of pounds for children in need since the age of 5. And this year is her 25th silver year and wants to make a special effort to raise as much money as possible and present a cheque to the BBC studios in November. Now, if you would like to help Amy achieve this, the link that you need to go to is www.justgiving.com/Amy-Wright, which is WRIGHT 23 and then slash. So I hope that you can support Amy. I think it's wonderful what she's achieved. And in the meantime, I'd just like to say thanks for listening and have a great day until the next time. Thanks. Bye.